Welcome to the Accelerating Operational Performance Podcast. I'm Greg Schenkel, President of Unique Training and Development and Frontline Leadership Systems. And as always, our mission here is to help you get better, help your organization get better results with less stress and frustration. And this podcast episode is actually brought to you by our new Site Leader Development Program. This is a program that we have for plant managers, site leaders, distribution center leaders, and also other senior leaders who may be developing and growing into those roles. And the program is really geared to help plant managers and site leaders elevate their purpose instead of just being more inclined to focus on the daily operational issues to actually set the direction strategically for their plant and location and become more effective at empowering their team. And today's guest is a favorite of mine because we've done business together. My guest today is Megan Barter, and I'm going to read a little bit of her bio just so that you get to know her a little bit better and I do her justice. So Megan Barter is Head of Organizational Development at Votorantim Cementos North America. That's in Portuguese, by the way, which my pronunciation isn't great. But you can shorten it down to VCNA. One of their big brands that we've certainly worked with is St. Mary's Cement. So it's a Brazilian company that owns a very large portfolio of building materials company in the cement business. Megan herself has over 15 years of progressive HR experience. She has a proven track record of driving strategic change and fostering workplace excellence in complex environments. We're going to dive into her experience in performance management, talent strategy, and how she's observed and seen and helped organization future-proof their people practices. Megan Barter, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much, Greg. I'm so happy to be here.
Yeah, this is awesome. One of the things, and of course, our relationship really developed after you'd taken over the role from someone else, and I just find it very refreshing. You know, your mindset towards people development is refreshing, and I know we've had a lot of great conversations about that, so I'm looking forward to diving in. And I should let people know that if you want to contact Megan, best bet is to go on LinkedIn and search her as Megan Barter. The website for VCNA is VCNA.com, and that would be if you're in the market for ready-mix concrete or cement products, of course, you can look them up. It's an excellent company, and they believe very much in developing people and amazing world-class processes. So, Megan, let's start, I guess, first of all, with I like to start with the good stuff, like a success story that that you remember, especially, by the way, maybe I'll start even back further. I always like to think that the guests that we have, and certainly it applies to me, for a while early in your career, you're not really certain that you're onto something, that you're confident in what you can do. And usually there's a project or a manager where that sort of cements, play of words here, that usually cements for you that you are, you've got something, like your confidence grows from some achievement earlier on in your career. Do you remember kind of one of the first times when you thought, I think I'm onto something here?
Yes, actually, very early on in my career, I had a manager who I still to this day look to as a mentor. And so, you know, this was one of my first jobs actually out of college. And so wasn't quite sure how to navigate the working world or the professional world yet. And he really took me under his wing and, you know, saw strengths in me that I didn't see at the time and really played on those strengths to help me grow. And it kind of led me into the path of HR as itself. And he sponsored me. He, you know, brought my name up in meetings where I wasn't in them. So he provided me the visibility and the support and just the confidence that I needed to get to that next level in my career. I still talk to him to this day. One thing I'll always remember about him is on his desk, he used to have a plaque, and this plaque still just it sticks with me today, where it says, it's nice to be important, but it's important to be nice.
Wow.
And that was always something that rang true in all of his communications, his meetings. And he was just a great person to help me propel to the next level.
Awesome. Well, there's two good lessons I want to pull out for the audience based on what you said. One is you need to carry yourself in such a way and achieve in such a way that someone else is speaking kindly of you behind closed doors, because those are the meetings where people talk about who's ready for a new assignment, who should we consider for this. And so you want to have that impression on at least one champion, if not more, where behind closed doors, they're speaking about your capabilities. And I think the second takeaway from that is, remember that you as a leader could be doing this for someone else in terms of sponsoring their growth, giving them the encouragement that they might need, recognizing that people go through all sorts of interesting bumps and successes in their career, and being there in both those positive and low times just to keep someone on the journey. Remember that no one goes from 0 to 100 in terms of talent and development. It's something that people need to be on their journey, and they need someone who will champion them and sponsor them. So thank you for that. That was a great story. And that probably addresses the success, although was there something in a project that resonated with you in terms of a positive outcome where, again, it just was sort of proof of concept that what you were doing was working well?
Yeah. So I sort of took a lot of those values. And when I was thinking about a project that went really successfully, my mind goes to one specific project in my career, where we were building a global career path for our technology team. And why it was successful is because we were a global organization, and it was really taking all of those different cultural values together to agree on one way forward, right? Like, how can we agree on a job title that is different in this area of the world and in this area of the world? And so for me, it was understanding the people that we were working with and what was important to them, and being able to talk about that in larger groups and come up with a solution that fit everybody together. So that was something, in the end, we successfully created an amazing global career path for our technology team, with a lot of hard work and debating, but respect and integrity along the way.
Awesome. So one question that brings up for me, and we've done a little bit of work, but a relatively small amount of work with a global audience where we have participants, let's say, from India and China and Europe, all in the same session with people from North America and South America. You've probably been exposed more to global organizations. What's something, I mean, maybe it's the same story, but what's something that you've observed in managing or developing talent when it does cross a lot of borders and cultures?
Yeah, so really understanding, you know, there's different ways of operating in different cultures that are culturally relevant, right? That are relevant to those nations. And I like to look back at Geert Hofstede's work on cultural organizations, right? And deep diving. So in his work, he really deep dived into the different regions and how they operate, what values they hold, you know, closer to them than others. So recognizing that going into the conversation and having those discussions up front, I think can help somebody facilitate those conversations to keep that in mind, right, as you're talking through things.
Awesome. So now, you know, you and I have had some really great conversations even recently on this idea of leadership development and operating performance. But I know you've thought about that before you and I started talking about it. I just wondered what your take is on how leadership impacts operating performance. Is there linkages? Why don't operating managers see the value in it as much as they should? Just what's your take on that link between leadership effectiveness and development and operational performance?
Yeah, absolutely. And I definitely think that there is a strong link between leadership and operational excellence and performance. What I think the tricky thing to think about are in that dynamic with leadership and, let's say, outcomes, production specifically, is that a lot of times the production outcomes, we're measuring them, we've got KPIs, things like that. But what we don't see behind the scenes is the motivation from that leader to get to that space. So I think when we're measuring production, we're missing a lot of that people element that is required of leadership to motivate, to encourage, to provide recognition. And all of those are great traits of leaders to lead that team successfully.
Yeah, that's a good point. We just had a meeting as recently as yesterday, just talking about how to, you know, what is the balance between teaching someone good communication skills or motivation skills and also looking at KPIs. And I think how you get your KPIs and whether your KPIs are even close to, you know, fulfilling the full potential operationally are good questions to ask, because you could technically drive to your KPI results, but leave behind you a trail of destruction as far as culture goes and, you know, turnover and that sort of thing. So you're just saying it's important actually to balance both, to not just prioritize one over the other, but to do them both at the same time.
Absolutely. And in some cases, Greg, I think that, you know, those leadership skills can ultimately organically lead to KPIs or outcomes or production outcomes.
Right. And sometimes they don't, but you know, the other thing to realize is there's lots of things that influence operational performance to KPIs. Could be the market conditions, logistics of where that operating location is. But we know, like, if you balanced out sort of other factors that might drive the performance of a business unit, the leader does have an impact. So I'm glad we're on the same page that way. Now, one of the things that organizations, and I'm sure yours invests a lot in this, and you've seen it over the years, is organizations really love lean and continuous improvement. And that's you know, a no-brainer, right? We're just trying to make processes more efficient and effective. I'm just curious what you've noticed, because a lot of organizations really don't ever yield as much as they should from those activities, even though they spend a lot of time and money either training their own CI people or using consultants from outside. And I'm just wondering what take you might have on this, you know, lean and 5S and continuous improvement, Kaizen, and how, you know, organizations either get more from those efforts or sometimes don't.
Yeah. There's definitely merit into some of those lean, you know, procedures, structures that you have in place. I think when it comes to efficiency in today's world, we are so technology forward. And so I think it's almost a learning curve of keeping up with the latest and greatest technology and what those capabilities are. So it's almost doing an assessment of that digital readiness and how we can leverage some of these technologies to either make things more efficient, automate a few things in our processes, and then be able to leverage our people in more strategic ways.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. I mean, one client we're working with right now in the area of their site leader development, we've recognized that part of extracting the maximum value from all these efforts that are going on to make the companies run better really can be hamstrung when the site leader has to be involved in every little thing and hasn't really sort of empowered people, hasn't sort of overcome what we would call decision-making waste, right? Where the leader's making decisions and solving problems that other people should be taking care of. So I think that would help accelerate some of the results from those programs. I want to change tacks a little bit and talk about the fact that organizations are kind of by their design somewhat siloed. People are focused in certain areas like finance and operations and talent development, HR. And I'm wondering what you've noticed in organizations where there can sometimes be either a lack of alignment or where groups are really focus just too much on themselves and not other groups. What observations do you have around sort of knocking down organizational silos or what perpetuates them?
Yeah, Craig, I think that's $1 million question right there.
Oh, good. There's money to be made then. All right.
Unfortunately, I don't have the key to this answer, but what I have seen in my experience of trying to break down those silos, a few things that I've implemented in my past life and career has been sort of rotational programs and getting the bigger picture out there, right? Of sometimes employees, when they're stuck in their silos, they don't know that there's a bigger picture, that the world is a lot bigger around them, right? So exposing individuals to what's happening in other areas of the business. And like I said, rotational programs are a really great way to embed somebody in a different area of the business. And it doesn't have to be just new grads that are rotating and then placed in a specific role after that rotational is done. We can have experienced rotational programs right. as well with leaders to learn other areas of the business. And when you break down those silos, you get more of that big picture.
Right. Right. So yeah, sometimes even in a classroom, we can use an exercise called walk a mile in my shoes and get people to kind of put themselves in the shoes of some different functions. I think though, the ability to actually enter those people's shoes through a rotational program is pretty awesome, because once you start to see that it's not us and them, it's us together collaboratively trying to deliver results. That though prompted me to have a different question. Now this, I know, and by the way, our audience should know that I do, you know, send a set of starter questions so our guests aren't sort of totally unprepared for the podcast. And then based on the conversation, sometimes we go into different areas. But one of the areas that came up recently with one of our clients is they have a sort of a corporate group of support functions and centers of excellence that they happen to call them. And those groups are trying to help the operating business units, you know, run better, do better. But sometimes those COEs or those support functions have their own set of objectives that they're trying to happen in the quarter or in that year. And so they start to direct the operating units, you know, and take up some of their time and say, this is a priority. And then those site leaders and operational leaders are then into those initiatives, but they don't always feel in control of them. And I wasn't sure whether you had a take on, like, how do corporate groups interface effectively with the operating groups without sort of hijacking the agenda? Any comment on that?
Yeah, it's definitely a balance for sure, because COEs they're aligned with maybe overall organizational strategy. Mm-hmm. And some of what they might try to accomplish within the businesses are to make things a little more efficient and easier on the business, so they can focus on that production. But it has to be a conversation of balance of production and that strategy. It just has to be that balance.
Yeah.
So connecting with the business from a talent perspective, from an OD perspective, is incredibly important. We have to have a pulse on the business of, when are there, you know, busy times? Maybe their busy times is not a great, you know, time to launch a survey.
Yeah.
You know, so keeping a pulse on the climate of the business and where they're at certain times.
Yeah, and that's a good point, because some organizations do sort of a pre-clearinghouse at the manager level, at the executive level, where they say, we can really only burden the operations with three or four initiatives, you know, in a year or whatever the time frame might be. So let's make sure we're not putting 9 change initiatives on them all at once and expecting them to execute them all well. So those are some really good points that you brought up. I didn't ask you one of the questions, which I know our listeners, everyone wants to hear. What did you learn from one of the mistakes you made or something that didn't go as well, but it still proved to be a learning experience for you? Did you have one that came to mind when you think back on something that may not have gone well, but you know, you picked up something positive from it?
Yes, there has been an instance. So again, earlier on in my career, I worked really hard. I was in charge of leading a technology implementation for the organization. And, you know, we got to the final stages of implementing of all of the data migration, everything like that. And when it came to the final stages of implementation, we were not ready, even though we committed to it.
Yeah.
And so we had to postpone, we had to regroup, we had to, communicate why we were postponing. And so for me, that was a learning experience in one, a little bit of not failure, but it helped me learn how to be resilient and maybe not overpromise.
I think you nailed it, because I think we're all susceptible, especially early on, and it's even more so in a complex project that has a lot of deliverables and a lot of moving pieces, is that making firm commitments to dates without sort of understanding the domino effect that might have to go back. And I suppose that projects slip all the time in organizations, especially technology projects, and especially big, big complex projects. So I think maybe the learning thing that you got from when you were, you know, newer in your career or earlier in your career is you either can underestimate the number of moving parts that might drive that deadline. Or I think the other thing that I've seen in my career is you think, oh, I'll just be able to make up for that. We'll just be able to crash the schedule and, you know, we'll get it back on track. And you don't realize that you could have probably predicted the derailment or the delay earlier on if you sort of had to acknowledge that because this thing slipped, this next thing is not, we're not going to make it up later in the schedule. And that's just something I guess everybody learns from a project management perspective. So I think it's good that I think that earlier on, there is a tendency for us to overpromise a little bit because we're trying to make other people happy and tell them the things that they want to hear. And then you realize, no, what people really want is some version of the truth. Now, they might say, well, how come it's taking two more months than it did? And as long as you have a good explanation and a good story for that that's meaningful, then, of course, in business, there's always going to be problems and challenges. So thanks. I think you nailed it quite well. I wanted to talk a little bit about engagement, and you've already answered sort of the cultural differences when you look across global enterprises, but what do you think of this demographic change that we're in, and how big a deal is that in terms of leadership changes? Is it overblown? Do the consultants just oversell this to sell more consulting, or is there real issues around demographic engagement levels?
Yeah, I think that's a really good question, especially when we look at, let's say, generational differences within work populations. And really, I think it does go back to what is the motivating factor for each of these different groups or demographics of people, right? What is important to them? And how can we make them feel recognized with the rewards that they're expecting, right? Or wanting and motivated by? So there is a shift in how we do recognize, motivate, and reward, I think, maybe different areas of the business or different demographics. I think more flexibility is definitely something that's wanted and needed in some of those areas of recognition, rewards. So I think that's sort of the direction I see some organizations going.
All right. No, that makes a lot of sense. I mean, I believe that if you get to know people, especially, you can make some broad assumptions across demographic groups based on certain tendencies. But as one of our team members said, it's not that stereotypes are completely incorrect. It's just that they're not a full and complete picture of what someone is. It's a generalization. And so I think leaders just have to make sure that each person on their team, they get to understand what their interests are. There are some trends, of course, that change that leaders need to be aware of. So, you know, at this point, usually I want to ask, I know we covered a lot of ground today and the time flew by already. I'm just interested in, is there something else maybe that you wanted to share with the audience that I didn't ask you and maybe should have?
I think that one message I think I would like to just get across is in leadership, whether you're in leadership positions with the title or not, everybody, I fully believe everybody in an organization has that leadership potential and capability. Everybody is a leader no matter what role you have. Yeah. But really looking at that, though, internally at your values and strengths. That's something that, you know, resonated me early and on in my career, and it stuck with me, you know, being true to those, your inner values and in playing off of your strengths, in the workplace, I think,
I would agree. So especially where, I mean, I guess people's values could be a little bit off kilter for what the organization needs, but trusting that at a deeper level, most people have a really strong set of values about who they are and what they think is right and fair. And you're just saying, just tune into that radio station every once in a while, making sure that you're aligned with that. And if something is a bit off, at least acknowledge it and think about it a little bit more, because without it, you know, it's harder than ever to be, you know, remain ethical, to remain true to being kind to people and so forth. So I like that, because in my interactions with you, you live a lot of those values very visibly, and it's great because it makes you more magnetic and a good person to work with. So that serves both the organization well and other people who interact with you. I just wanted to say how much I appreciated having you as a guest on the podcast. And again, for our audience, if you want to reach out to Megan, you can do that on LinkedIn. Megan Barter is how you would do that. And she works for VCNA, a very large Brazilian-owned company in the cement business and other building materials. And that website is vcna.com. So, Megan, thank you so much for being a guest on the podcast. I know our listeners and viewers got a lot from it today.
Thanks so much, Greg. It's been a pleasure.
And thank you for watching the podcast or listening to it. Remember, of course, we don't want to be a well-kept secret. We want you to share that with your friends and colleagues. And so like and share and rate the podcast in the podcasting app that you use. And of course, if you wanted to see the video version, but you were listening to it in the audio, you can do that on our YouTube channel at unique.leadership on YouTube. For now, I'll just wish you well on your leadership journey, and we'll see you next time on the AOP podcast.